session number 11063, rule 8.
Mr. Byrne, relate.
I've been torpedoed, and I did 4 days in a boat, and it was very cold. He said, and where are you going now? I said, I'm going home on leave. He said, where do you live? I said, Bradford. Oh, well, he said, the train pulls into Waterloo. He said, I'm going to St Pancras. Well, we'll have a taxi and I'll drop you at King's Cross. Anyway, I got my kit out and he helped me with my kit and he called the taxi. First time I'd been across London in a taxi, remember. When I came through the following morning, that morning, it was the first time I'd been in London. Anyway, he got the taxi and we drove round and he dropped me at King's Cross and he said, I said, thank you. Anyway, I caught the, I think it was the 10:30 train out of King's Cross. And to say I slept on train, I didn't. I were up and down and I were itchy and, you know, I felt real that I was going home. Anyway, I got back to Bradford about 5 o'clock in the morning and I put my kit in the left luggage office in Bradford station at that time. You put your kit on a trolley and dragged it across the station. I was really tired. You got to bear in mind, I'd travelled from Thurzwick, north of Scotland, to London. Had a night's sleep, and then down to Portsmouth and back, and then back to Bradford. And I'd had no sleep that night. I was feeling a bit rough. And in Bradford at that time, the left luggage office, there was a bell, and you pull this rope, and this bell rang, and somebody came from somewhere. Anyway, this porter come. He said, "What is it, kid?" I said, can I leave my kit? He said, you look. I said, yeah, I feel tired. He said, what do you want to leave? I said, the lot. He said, right. So I put it all in and I don't know how much it was, forms or something like that. I don't know whether you paid or when you picked it up, I'm not sure. Anyway, I went out and I think it was about 4:30. First tram up. And I went to get on it and conductor said, you can't get on this, this is a staff car. And I said, bloody stop me. Anyway, I went upstairs and I got my tuppence out. It was tuppence then, 2 old pennies. And I also remember sitting down and there were three fellas sat in front, sprawled out, tram men, and they were complaining how hard life was and this sort of stuff and other. And one of them said to me, you'll be all right on ships having a bloody good time. And I said, no, not all good. Anyway, we're about a mile and a half out of town, and then when I got up to get off, I said, you see, I've just been sunk. And they didn't know what to say. Anyway, I got off, went down what about 3 minutes from tram to our house. We lived in Raglan Terrace then. We're a terrace house. Anyway, I got my key out, opened the door and went in. I shouted upstairs, Mum, I'm home. Mum, I'm home, it's me, Austin. Well, I didn't know that I'd been reported missing. I didn't know she'd been worried about me. Anyway, all of a sudden, our Kathleen, my eldest sister, she'd be 16 then, she come flying down steps and she said, where have you been? Thought you were dead. I said, don't be silly, I'm all right. No, she said, they've been looking all over for you. They thought you were dead, they've been to Glasgow. I said, I'm all right. She said, well, where have you been? I said, I've been to Russia. But I got sunk going, I didn't get there. Anyway, my mother come down and with a big weeping do. And then my youngest sister came down, she was 4. And I said, where's my dad? They said, oh, he's on nights. He worked at Crofts at Engineering. He'd been there 20-odd years when war started. And I said, where's my dad? They said, oh, he's on nights. And my mother started roaring. We thought you were dead. I've been to Glasgow. Oh, I have been, you know, the usual thing. My mother always worried. I don't know what she worried about. I mean, worried for herself, what she was going to do. Anyway, she carried on and she said, our Kathleen made me a cup of tea. And I think a cup of tea and a slice of jam and bread. And my mother said, you better go tell your dad. So with that, Crofts were only about a good five minutes walk away. I ran biggest part of the way. And I went to the time office and I said, can I speak to Harry Byrne, please? Is it Shafton? And this fellow looked at me. He said, you his son? I said, yes. So he said, walk up there, they'll come to meet you. So he must have run through, and my father come running, and I came, went running. And my dad said, come in, I thought you were dead. I said, no, I'm all right. He said, are you all right yourself? I said, yeah. My feet were still sore, and you could bite my fingers. Anyway, he came out and came down home. He said that his boss said, get off home, Harry. And this would be about 6 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, my dad's, we had a cup of tea again and we had a chat. And my dad said, you better go tell my mother. Well, she lived 3 streets away. And so I went round to my grandmother's and I just shouted under the window, Grandma, it's me. She said, yes, don't shout at me, are you? Anyway, she came down and she was glad to see me. So next trip then, when it was daylight, were go down and see my other grandma. So I went down and saw her and she were happy to see me. And then I said to my mother, I've got a letter to write. She said, oh, too. I said, Walter Baxter in Morecambe. Tell his mother he's all right, he's alive. Anyway, I wrote this letter and I got 8 o'clock post. I don't know where the stamp, I don't know where she got a stamp from. It wasn't like my mother to have a damn stamp. She'd most probably nip out and get it off of somebody. I don't think she'd have a stamp, my mother. Anyway, I caught the first post, or 8 o'clock post at that time. And next morning, a relative of his that lived in Bradford came to see me. They'd got in touch with them and they wanted to know where they were. But he got home all right, but he never went to see. He lost half his foot. But I don't hear of him now. But a couple of years ago, I got the idea of writing to him. Bill Short got to know him better than me. He goes, they were there 4 months together. And I wrote a letter and I just put on it, Walter Baxter, survivor, SS Induna, Aysham. And I addressed it, I put it in another envelope and I addressed it to the postmaster in Aysham. Anyway, I got a letter back within about 3 days. And they'd found him, and so all they had were a name and a town. And in his letter he said that he were going up the street and the postman come down. He said, you're Walter Baxter? He said, yes. He said, you're on merchant ships? He said, yes. Why? He said, there's a letter for you at Royal Naval Club in Morecambe. It's from a mate of yours. Get up and get it. So it just shows you post office can be. And it were Bill, I don't think he gets about much now. I think his wife's poorer. So that were that. Anyway, I came home, as I get back to 1942, I came home and I'd got 14 days leave and they said, go to doctors, you'll get some more leave. Anyway, I went to the doctors and he said, I can't give you no more leave because you're fit to travel. He said, send this in and you'll get about 2 extra days out of it until they send you to an army doctor. Anyway, I sent it in. He said, you won't get much. He said, I can't. Beginning at war, he said, I could have given you a certificate. They've stopped that now. Anyway, I sent that in and about a couple of days later I got a letter back that I had to go see this army doctor in Bradford. And I think I got worse as I got home with folks saying how rough you'd had it and how poorly you looked and all that sort of stuff. But then I was beginning to swell up. I was getting fatter, cold were coming out. I mean, I was getting fat and my face was right polished and red, like a red apple. And I didn't always feel good. Anyway, I went to see this doctor from Manningham Lane and he said, you aren't fit for active service, I'll say that. He said, if you worked with one of my boys, I'd put you in hospital. He said, I'd either here have to put you in hospital or say you're fit to travel back to Liverpool. I said, I'm fit to travel to Liverpool. He said, yes, but you're not fit to go to sea. Anyway, I went back to Liverpool and I reported to Brownlow Hill. So I got there. Royal Library Building in Brownlow Hill. Well, I were in trouble. Oh, I was going to get everything. I were all sorts of stuff. That will be these characters that never went to sea. Anyway, they said I'd have to go see a doctor because I'd been sick ashore. They said I'd been swinging it. Anyway, I went to see this doctor. I'll also remember him as a weedy little creature with glasses on. And there were a R.N. Petty officer, sick birth attendant there. He wasn't bad. And he said, what's the matter with you, boy? Where have you been? And what you've been doing? You've been sick ashore. And oh, the naughty little boy. I said, I've just been torpedoed. I've done 4 days in a lifeboat. He said, oh yes. I said, just off Murmansk. Well, neither of them knew where Murmansk was. And the doctor examined me. He said, he's all right. I said, I've had frostbite and my feet and my hands are still numb. So I looked at it. He said, no, you haven't got frostbite. With frostbite, you'll go black. He said, anyway, you only get frostbite above 60 degrees north. I said, but I was torpedoed off Murmansk. But you only get frostbite above 60 degrees north. He didn't know where Murmansk was. 50 degrees north, sorry, he said. England's 48 to 50, isn't it? Something like that. And he didn't know how far north I'd been, and that were a doctor in the Royal Navy. I didn't have much time for this shore stuff after that. I mean, the rest of the war, I spent my time looking at them with contempt. Anyway, I were in there, and I were on standby draft. I were on working parties and such stuff. One working party I got on were taking folk, standby draft folk, to join ships. Anyway, I got this job taking folk to ships, different ships, and I saw this fella go to a ship, and he just walked across a plank, and the ship sailed, and he shouted, "Tell me mother where I've gone." So 2 days later, I got a draft to a ship that was Liverpool Belfast. I were happy for that. If I'd have gone deep sea willing on a big ship, but I didn't fancy going on another small ship. Anyway, I stuck that, and I got fed up of it. You went up the Mersey and back down the Mersey. You came back down the Mersey each day at back of a minesweeper. Then you went to Belfast, and it's sunny, you're in Liverpool, it's raining, you're in Belfast. Anyway, eventually, every time I said I was going to get off and ask for a change, my mother said don't. And so eventually I said to my mother, "Look, I'm going deep water." So at the end of 1943, I said, "I want a change." And so I left that ship, and I came home on leave for Christmas. Anyway, I went back, and I was in Liverpool for about a couple of weeks, and then I got a draft to a ship called, well, they told me they called it the Port McMurray. Now, the port line has ships that run to Australia. Oh, I were happy, I would go to Australia. But when we got to, there were four of us joined her, and when we got to Manchester, there were this shore staff again mouthing it off on the station, "You're going to Russia." It was a 9 o'clock training, and what is it? Early train or business people going into Manchester. He's telling the world and his dog where we're going. So one of them said, "Shut up, else I'll throw you under train." Anyway, he shut up. Anyway, we got to Salford. I looked at this ship, I thought, it is going to Russia, it were armed at teeth. Totally different from when we went before. This was a year and a half later. Anyway, this was January 44, yes. It had just come back from Russia, it were going again. Some of the same gunners were going with it, others had got off. Anyway, we went aboard and reported to the petty officer, a fellow called Street from Exeter, nice lad. He was older than me. And he said, "Have you been deep water before?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Where have you been?" I said, "I've been to Russia." "Oh, when?" I said, "42. March 42, PQ-13. Well, nobody know PQ-13, but they all know PQ-17. "Oh, what it rough?" I said, "Yes, we got it. I did 4 days in a lifeboat." He said, "Come round to my cabin." So I went round to his cabin. He said, "Tell me." I said, "I did 4 days in a lifeboat. I haven't been deep water since, but I want to go deep water again." He said, "Oh." Anyway, he went ashore to report that we'd joined the ship. So when he came back, he said, "Teacher, I want you." So I went round. He said, I was shook at getting another ship to Russia. He said, "Teacher, I want you." So I went back round, and he said, "What?" He said, "Look, I've been ashore and I've seen the officer ashore." He said, "It's rough getting another ship to Russia when you've been it once." He said, "You live in Bradford, it's not far away. Get ready, go home, have a drink and come back at morning. No leave pass, just do a run. The officer said to tell you that." He said, "There's another lad lives nearby," so he said, "I'll tell him to go with you." He said, "It don't look as bad then." He said, "In the morning when you come back, if you don't want to go, you tell me, and he takes you off and swaps you with another gunner and put you on a ship going west, and the other gunner comes aboard here. Only me, you and him know why the swap's being made," he said, "and we'll never meet again, so nobody will ever know." Anyway, I thought, well, fair enough. So I got this other lad, French. He came home. He lived in Dewsbury, and he came home. He was full of his own importance a bit, and what they'd done and this sort of stuff, and Russia, the Russian trip wasn't as bad as it was made out to be. Anyway, they'd had a quiet run up there and back at winter, and I came home, and my mother, I also remember coming in, my mother upstairs, and I, Kathleen, said, "Have you got a ship?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Where's it going?" I said, "Russia." "Oh, hell," she said. Anyway, my mother came down and said, "Have you got a ship?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Where's it going?" I said, "It's going to Russia." She said, "Well, you'll have to tell them to take you off that ship. I can't stand it." Well, at that moment, I hadn't made my mind up whether to go or not. But when she said she couldn't stand me going to Russia, and I'd have to tell them to take me off, I said, "Mother, I've made my mind up, I'm going." So I, Kathleen, said, "Are you hungry?" I said, "Yes." She said, "I'll make you some beans on toast." I also remember that, beans on toast. Anyway, I went back next day, and a few days later we sailed. Quite nice sailing that canal. Kids were shouting to you. you had a good drink and you went, you sailed, and then you got a short night after. You got a short about 3 nights going that canal. Anyway, we sailed and then went up to Dunoon, and from Dunoon, I think it was Dunoon, up to Lochiel again, and then from Lochiel we set off. Now this time it was totally different. Where before we went to Iceland and then right round the edge of the ice, this time 44, you had a fantastic escort. I reckon there'd be about 60 or 80 escort vessels, a carrier, a cruiser stuck it convoy, and you sailed right up the Norwegian coast, and it was an 8-day trip and you were there. But on the way, what is it, she got engine trouble, and on the way the fire bars went and she couldn't keep pace, so they signalled the Commodore that they couldn't keep pace, and he said he would slow down 1 rev per minute for 1 hour of every watch, which meant nothing. And so we dropped right back, and they were replacing the fire bars, which I've told is a tricky job, steaming. And we dropped right back, and we got right out of the escort. There were two rings of escort, and we were at the back of the lot. And it ended up that the deck charges for the submarine attack was forward of us. Where the deck charges had been astern of us, they were forward of us. Anyway, it went on, and we were just chugging on, and there were this here escort vessel. I later found out they called it the Maratta, HMS Maratta. Anyway, she kept dropping back, and you could just make the shape out of her in the dark. She came that near, and he used to speak to her over his loud ailer and ask us how we were going on, and wish us well. I will drop back each time there's a lull in the attack. Anyway, this went on for long enough, and all of a sudden he dropped back one time, and you could fair sense him come back. He used to drop to your starboard quarter and then increase his revs, and they were off. Anyway, this time he dropped back and he just got off the starboard quarter, and there was one god almighty crack, and I think there were 17 saved off her. She'd gone. So whether he aimed at them, aimed at us and missed and hit them, or aimed at them for them, I don't know. But whether he thought they were us, but it were damn lucky, because he was very, very close to us, and he went, and our 17 got off. Anyway, when it come daylight, the convoy were right on the skyline, and we caught them up. And then the night after, we got another heavy attack. And as I said, it was one day, I don't know which day it was, some aircraft came in, and this here anti-aircraft cruiser just opened up. Good God, it gave me the shock of my life. I never knew a ship could fire so many guns. But the aircraft just went off, and then when they came in again, they put the fighters up from the carrier. And as I said, it was scary. I was scared, I'll admit that. I mean, at that time, I knew in the water in 4 or 5 minutes and you were dead, and I'd been through it all once before. Some of these that hadn't been up there before, they said it was scary, but they said afterwards it was more scary for me, knowing the old consequences. But anyway, we got there. The smokers, some of them admitted smoking 100 cigs a day going up there, and one or two of them said that in the 8-day trip they reckoned there'd been nudging 1,000. So you can tell how long you try to keep awake. You only slept at the when you really had to. Anyway, we'd lined up and gone into Murmansk, and as we're going down the inlet into Murmansk, you thought, oh, it's all over, we're safe. And all of a sudden somebody shouting, mine, and right ahead of us this great big mine. Well, you couldn't swing starboard in the port because you were in a channel. And this mine drifted right up to the bows, and it went the full length of the ship, about 8 or 10 foot away from the ship. It was just the pressure of the water of the hull that were keeping this great big mine out. And it drifted astern, and somebody then, one of the escorts, put a spotlight on it, and that was safe. Anyway, we were in Murmansk, and we got a lot of air raids. One day we were going on deck and bombs dropped that close that me and another lad got wet through with splashing with water. But there's not much to say about that trip, because it was a straight... at that time they were just fighting their way up, and they went up, you just steamed and you had good cover, and that was it. Anyway, we'd about 4 or 5 days in Murmansk, and then they took us round to Archangel. Well, it took a week to get through the narrow part, is it the throat, the Goreks, or the throat of the White Sea, because as you're going through the ice, the icebreaker cuts the ice forward and you'll go forward, and then the ice is drifting out to the Kara Sea, or the Barents Sea, whichever it is there, and you're steaming forward and going back. But when we got through that bit of ice, then they towed us up the river, and we discharged in Archangel, which Archangel, as then, it was just like an old wooden shanty cowboy town that you see in the pictures. And strange part about it is, we left Archangel to come home on the 30th of March 1944. That was the same day as I was sunk up there in 1942. And we went round to Murmansk, and we got the usual submarine attacks. You just steam straight ahead, and you got all the depth charges going, and you didn't really know what was happening because there was nobody getting sunk, and you just steamed on, and you got the depth charges attack. And 7 days later, we were back in Loch Ewe, and we were home then, and that was my Russian experiences.
What did you feel about the U-boat crews that were doing this type of thing to you? Did you hate them?
No, I never hated them, no. I just thought if I'd have been a German, I wouldn't have been doing that, because there's no way I'd have gone to sea in a submarine. But the fella I hit in the aeroplane, there's no doubt the aeroplane, I hit somebody and I hurt somebody, but I never hurted him. I was never sorry for what I did, but I never hated him. And the U-boat, I've often wondered, I think I've read afterwards it were U-104 that torpedoed us, and I've often wondered what happened to U-104. I said, whether they got through the war or not, I don't know. But no, I didn't hate them, no.